I did want to note before we begin that on the due process topic, there is a case that's not in the paper, was decided by the Texas Supreme Court last week, and I think it was mentioned in the state law update yesterday. It's Mosley versus Texas Health and Human Services Commission. The site is 2019 Westlaw 1977062. It was a due process case. The issue was a situation in which an employee of the Texas Family and Protected Services was listed on an employee misconduct registry, wouldn't be able to get a job, obviously, due to reportable conduct in a group home. She was affirmatively misled about her appeal rights, and so by a notice that the agency provided to her, and so for that reason, she didn't properly file a motion for a hearing, which was a necessary prerequisite. The Supreme Court ruled that in this circumstance, it violated her due process rights to enforce that rule against her, and so sent the case back down to allow her to file the motion for a hearing that she was affirmatively misled into not doing. So let's get to the other cases. First, I'm going to talk about free speech in the workplace. It's long been established that public employees do not wholly relinquish their First Amendment rights by accepting public employment. However, their rights can be more limited than those of the public generally. The courts generally engage in what we call Pickering balancing, where the employee rights are measured against the governmental employer's needs. The more important the speech, generally the more protection is going to be afforded. There's a four-element test for public employee free speech claims. First, did the employee suffer an adverse employment action? Second, did the employee speak on a matter of public concern? Third, was the employee's interest in speech outweigh the employer's interest in governmental efficiency? And finally, was the adverse action substantially motivated by the employee's speech? There's been an added element since 2006. Did the employee speak pursuant to official job duties? In Garcetti, the court ruled in 2006 that if employee speaks pursuant to official job duties, the speech is unprotected, no matter how important the element of public concern. It's been 13 years now, and I'm almost over this decision, but it still rankles me a little bit. The problem is, of course, that in most of these cases, you're talking about whistleblowing type of speech. The employee is reporting up the chain of command about wrongdoing. Garcetti itself involved a report of a police officer who was tampering with evidence. In those situations, if the employee has a duty to report that kind of conduct, it's going to be unprotected under Garcetti. Perhaps for that reason, in Lane versus Franks a few years back, they clarified speech connected to the job can still be protected as long as it's not speech required by the job. But the courts continue to blur this line pretty often, and unfortunately, the Fifth Circuit seems to be a leader in that category. Now, there is one undecided issue in this framework, and that's what constitutes an adverse employment action. The old law was that you had to have a concrete action like a discharge or a demotion that involved a loss of pay in order for the action to be reachable. A transfer, in some cases, could constitute an adverse employment action even without pay loss, if it was in effect a demotion. Well, in the Title VII context, the Supreme Court decided Burlington Northern, any action can be considered materially adverse if it would dissuade a reasonable employee from making a report. Now, Burlington Northern has been applied in the First Amendment context by some district courts in the Fifth Circuit, and I've given you an example there. But as late as this year, the Fifth Circuit continues to issue decisions saying that's not a decided question. So if you're a plaintiff side employee, a lawyer, you're probably going to want to adhere to the old standard because qualified immunity would probably protect an official that engaged in low-level retaliation. So let's get to the cases. The first case I want to discuss, Heffernan versus City of Patterson. The issue is what constitutes protected speech. In that case, a police officer who was known to be friends with the mayor's political opponent was seen at the opponent's campaign office picking up a yard sign for his mom. The chief mistakenly assumed that he was openly supporting the mayor's opponent and therefore had him demoted. The court held that in this context, the plaintiff could state a claim, a First Amendment claim. The court focused not on his actual actions. He didn't actually support the mayor's opponent. Rather, they focused on the defendant's belief about those actions, what motivated the adverse action. If the motivation is a desire to prohibit protected speech, then the plaintiff can state a claim. So we have an application of that here in the Fifth Circuit this year, Smith v. City of Madison, out of the Southern District of Mississippi. Facts: the mayor recommended an office administrator's discharge based on the mistaken belief that she was actively campaigning for his political rival. So that seems like a straightforward application of Heffernan, right? First Amendment violation. However, the court noted that the recommendation was pre-Heffernan by a slight period of time, so that they held the mayor was protected by qualified immunity because the law wasn't clearly established before Heffernan. However, and this was interesting, the court went on to hold the city liable. Now, normally you only have city liability if there's action pursuant to an official policy or by a final policy-making official. In this case, it was clear the city council was the final policy-making group. However, they simply rubber-stamped the mayor's recommendation of discharge, and for that reason, using a cat's paw theory, the court attributed the mayor's motivation to the council and held that the city could be held liable. So that's a way to find city liability if, in fact, you've got an illegal motivation.